Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's a mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip, but he really couldn't have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lanes. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Indeed, it is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. This is Chris Featherstone on behalf of Crave Wrestling, making it happen once again on a Tuesday evening. We're going to have some fun, just like we do every week. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live here. We have some interesting things today. We're going to talk about Battleground and, of course, all of the other random fun wrestling news. Let's start off with a trivia question. The first trivia question is, where was WrestleMania 3 located? Where was WrestleMania 3 located? All right, let's get right into Battleground here. First, we start off with the pre-show, Dolph Ziggler versus Damian Sandow. Dolph Ziggler with the win, and Ziggler, it was an interesting match there. It wasn't too bad at all. Ziggler with the win, I believe I did predict that correctly with the win, just because Damian Sandow has not been getting over anyways. They improperly booked him already, and I think that. We're looking for a cash-in with Damian Sandow coming in here soon. And for some reason, I don't know why the WWE does this, but for some reason, they make the decision to kind of de-push people who has the Money in the Bank briefcase as far as the people who are World Heavyweight Champion. I've said this before in the show. They don't push the people who has the World Heavyweight Championship Money in the Bank briefcase. I don't know why they do that. They did it with Sandow. They did it with Ziggler. They did it with Daniel Bryan. And I don't know. Maybe in their theory they believe that it will cause more of a reaction if someone's on a losing streak. But not really. I don't think that it was as successful as it could have been when Daniel Bryan won it and cashed it in, because he had it. He won in December. He won in TLC. Surprisingly, carried it to WrestleMania. But the whole 18-second debacle with against Sheamus, that just really proved that the WWE really didn't have enough stock in Daniel Bryan for that to happen. So, unfortunately, they went ahead and did the same thing to Dolph Ziggler, but His was a bit different, though. His was a bit different as far as the reaction is concerned. It was the day after WrestleMania. That was a good idea to cash in the Money in the Bank because that crowd, that Jersey crowd, was absolutely hot. And the cash-in was probably one of the most heavily ovated, had probably one of the best ovations of a cash-in that the Money in the Bank has ever had. So that was good. But as far as Sandow's is concerned, I don't know. I'll just say this much. Watch SmackDown and you'll see maybe a little bit of a turn on Damian Sandow. Watch this week's SmackDown. Next, we got Alberto Del Rio against RVD. A bit shocking to me and a bit disappointing. The match was not bad, so to speak. It was, the fact that it was a hardcore match, the fact that it did have a stipulation, that did help. That helped the feud because it was kind of a carry-on from Night of Champions. And I think that putting a stipulation of RVD having the chance to win was a good thing. But, a lot of the fans are smarks. So, many people knew that he was not going to win because of his contract negotiations of how it happens. But I know personally I was expecting more of a Ricardo Rodriguez heel turn, and to align himself with Del Rio again. Honestly, knowing that Rob Van Dam was going to be out, they really don't have much of a spot for Ricardo. I mean, we saw something on Raw, but I guess that was a way to write Ricardo off as well. So I think it was a bit disappointing as far as how it happened. A clean win against Rob Van Dam. It still didn't do anything for Alberto Del Rio because for some reason they are really, really trying to push Del Rio anyways, which is just a bad idea. I mean, no matter how you slice it, it's a bad idea to push Alberto Del Rio the way that they are. He's a failed project. I mean, there's not really much anything you can say else. But he's a failed project. There's nothing else that you could say about that. Del Rio, they tried when he first had his initial heel run when he was going against Rey Mysterio and Christian when he put both of them out. That was a good heel run. And then when he won the 40-man Battle Royal, I believe it was 2011 Royal Rumble, that was a good idea. And like I said before in the show, what really hurt Del Rio was when he lost against Edge what was that, 27, when he lost against Edge, when Edge was champ, and that was just a bad idea. It was a really bad idea. That really derailed the momentum that Alberto Del Rio had. So it was just, and since then, he's been a blah. He's been a blah heel, haven't really been the best asset to the WWE. He hasn't really been an asset to me. In my opinion, he hasn't been an asset, period. But for some reason, WWE is still trying and still holding on to any type of something that Del Rio has, and they consider him a main event guy. Del Rio's not a main event guy. He's a mid-card guy, at upper mid-card at best, but definitely not someone who carries the company, especially his two WWE championship runs. Talk about forgettable. Those were absolutely forgettable. Right now we've got chat. Log on live to the chat. Chat room usually gets pretty full and fun. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. And also we are on the first trivia question right now. The trivia question is, where was WrestleMania 3 located? Answer in the chat room. or you can call live 347-884-8452 if you're bold enough to say it live on air, or you can tweet at Crave Wrestling. Again, the question is, where was WrestleMania 3 held? Next match was the Real Americans. Again, we're covering Battleground here. Next match was the Real Americans against Santino and Kali. We reported on wrestling.com as far as and WWE.com initially reported. Just a throw-together match. Right now I see Michigan in the chat room. That's half right. So we're at in Michigan. I guess that's the other half of the question there. Silverdome, that's the location. Now we need the city. All right, thanks everybody for logging the chat room and answering and also tweeting at Crave Wrestling. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. Real Americans, Santino and Kali, throwaway match, but there was a big talk of will Cesaro do the giant swing against Kali, and that was probably – that was something I was looking forward to because I knew that would be one of the best spots of the night if that actually happened, and it did, and it was successful, and he got over, and people cheered, and he won that way. So I think that was a fantastic idea that they did that, just to boost up the Real Americans, because as a tag team, the Real Americans has been not really pushed. I mean, they've won a few matches. They won last month or so, they beat Primetime Players, I believe, once. They beat the Usos once. And so they really haven't been a reputable tag team. But that swing helped Cesaro, and there's been talks, and we reported at Wrestling Inc., there's been talks of Cesaro turning babyface soon. And I think that the swing alone will garner pops. I think that using Cesaro as a face, for those who followed him outside of WWE when he was Kali O'Castagnoli, he was mainly known as a heel. Excuse me, he's mainly known as a heel in ROH, mostly teaming up with Chris Hero as the Kings of Wrestling. But he did have a few face runs overseas. I believe in Chikara he had a face run, and he was over. And I think that the momentum was going for Cesaro, because this swing is catching on. He did it again on Raw. People liked it still. And so I really think that Cesaro could be a good face if used correctly. Great job in the chat room. Pontiac Silverdome is the correct answer in Pontiac, Michigan. And that is great. Next question. What pay-per-view did Ricky Steamboat defeat Ric Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship? What pay-per-view did Ricky Steamboat defeat Ric Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship? Again, log on to the chat room. Call in live 347-884-8452 or tweet at Crave Wrestling. The Crave Wrestling tweet's not the correct answer yet, but we'll continue to look online or look in the chat room and also look on Crave Wrestling tweet for the correct answer. Again, what pay-per-view did Ricky Steamboat defeat Ric Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship? Our Raw correspondent Derek will unfortunately not be with us today, but he gives us his best regards. Had a sudden change of plans as far as his night is concerned, and so we wish Derek, our Raw correspondent, the best in his endeavors, and he'll be back with us next week. Let's go on to Curtis Axel defeating R-Truth. Another thrown-together match. One thing I do like about Axel being involved in more Intercontinental title matches, this is what needs to happen. Stuff like this needs to happen. However, they're just throwing the matches together. I'm not a big fan of that. It seems like right before a pay-per-view, they decide to just throw together an Intercontinental title match with not a proper build. Let's think about Night of Champions. First of all, Night of Champions was the first time that he defended the title in 2 months. The time before that was the July 15th SmackDown against Chris Jericho. And so 2 months later, he defends the title at Night of Champions against Kofi Kingston, thrown together match. He beats Kofi Kingston, and they throw together another match because he gets distracted. R-Truth beats him on Raw, so somehow that throws together another match, and this feud's not going to go anywhere. I really don't see R-Truth and Curtis Axel having a angle with this. They're just throwing it together. Curtis Axel, unfortunately, he does not have charisma, and even with the help of and the acquisition of Paul Heyman, he's still one of those Paul Heyman guys that really it really doesn't help him much. I don't know if it, my biggest gripe about Curtis Axel is the guy has absolutely no charisma. He has an eraser, a pencil eraser has more charisma than Curtis Axel does. He just has absolutely no charisma. Heyman is doing his best to try to give Axel and try to help Axel and pump up Axel as far as his charisma is concerned. He's a great mouthpiece. One of the best mouthpieces of the business is Paul Heyman. However, not so much as far as Curtis Axel is concerned. I think what will help Curtis Axel is if they decide to just go ahead and give him a really, really good feud leading into Royal Rumble or a really, really good feud leading into WrestleMania of someone who is an upper mid-card talent that I can't even think of anyone right now that for the Intercontinental title that would really boost the title as a babyface is concerned. They tried it with Miz. Miz as champion really didn't pan out too well as a babyface. He won the title against Barrett at the pre-show. As far as you know, his babyface run and it just lasted very shortly, and it just wasn't a good idea for as far as how they booked the run. Now, Miz is so much in the ground right now as far as his babyface run is concerned that I don't even think that the Miz would be of any help. And so, I don't know. I mean, feel free to comment in the chat room. Feel free to tweet at Crave Wrestling. Call in live 347-884-8452. Who would help the Intercontinental title picture? What babyface person could feud with Curtis Axel and kind of bring life back into the Intercontinental title picture? Because I like Kofi Kingston, I like R-Truth. However, not so much. Not doing a really good job as far as that. Looks like we got a tweet here. Miz is not a good a big show. Possibly. Looks like we on a, in the chat room, maybe Ziggler. I'll pick Ziggler over Big Show or Miz. I think Ziggler would help. Ziggler would be a decent feud against Curtis Axel. I think that would be a good idea. Great call there as far as the possible feuds. But Ziggler's probably it. I mean, I can't really think of another face that would bring life back into the Intercontinental title. I'm trying to think of a world champion baby face that would bring life back into the Intercontinental title picture. Punk, I suppose. people like CM Punk, and CM Punk is way over, and you know, the world loves CM Punk. I keep telling everyone on previous shows that I'm going to have one of my flavor of the week segments is going to be why CM Punk is a upper mid card wrestler at best. And a lot of people know my take on CM Punk, and a lot of people are against that take, but I think I have a really good explanation. I think I have a good presentation of why CM Punk is just an upper mid carder with a cult-like following, because people just want to embrace themselves in CM Punk, and they just kind of identify themselves with him. But I digress. We'll go into that at the flavor of the week coming up here soon. I don't know when it is. Today's flavor of the week is what can make the World Heavyweight Championship picture better. We are taking a brief break from our Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down series. We've got a lot of messages and good reactions and good reviews on the Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down for the week segments. We've done Nation of Domination. We've done Hall of Fame candidates. We've also done the other Thumbs Down, NWO members. We also did NWO members, which was really fun as well. So we'll continue our Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down series. We're taking a brief break from it. But one of these days I'll talk about CM Punk and how I feel about him. All right, next we'll go to AJ Lee defeating Brie Bella. Nothing much here. I'm surprised they had Brie Bella be a part of the title picture. I mean, it seemed like they just thrust her into it. I mean, I understand the whole E-Total Divas thing, but Natalya seemed like she had the nod initially, and then Brie Bella comes around and just does that. I knew AJ was going to win. I didn't see Brie Bella winning the title. Really nothing from here. Wasn't really a good match. Tamina just kind of sneaks on Nikki Bella. And, just a meh match. Axel and R-Truth was short and not very good as well. The high spot of the night, by far, was Cody Rhodes and Goldust versus The Shield. Now, on my previous shows, I did talk about I prefer the six-man match just because Derek and I, we both talk about how we were traditionalists, and we prefer the whole, you know, old school feel and just kind of nostalgia, blast from the past. Vince McMahon, we report on Wrestling Inc. that Vince McMahon, if it was up his way, he would have had the six man, but it worked out really well. I think this was a fantastic match. I think this is one of the best pay per view matches of the year, just because the crowd in Buffalo was so glued to this match. And the reaction was just well done. I mean, just the spots were just fantastic. It was a lot of emotion in it. It was a fantastic match. The build was great. The emotion in the match was great. The storytelling was really good in the match. And we got to see a bionic elbow. I mean, what else would you ask for? What else could you ask for? We got to see a Dusty Rhodes, live and in living color, if you will, getting funky like a monkey, bionic elbow, fantastic match. I was absolutely, no complaints at all. That the last storytelling match I saw that was compared to that was the Undertaker versus Triple H Hell in a Cell match at 28. I think that was the last match. We got a comment on chat room. I want to see Dusty take a beating from The Shield. I totally disagree with that, just because I think we get too much of that. I mean, Dusty's Rose has been beat up a few times. He got jumped by The Shield. He got knocked out by Big Show on segments of Raw. And so it was fantastic. It was just, I was very, very happy with that. That was the highest spot of the night. Everything else was just, man, Bray Wyatt and Kofi Kingston was a decent match. I've seen on Bleacher Report and Wrestling Inc., I've seen mixed reviews about the match. It was better than I thought, actually. It was better than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a squash, but it wasn't a squash. And, in fact, Kofi Kingston held his own, and Bray Wyatt had some many, many moments where he was at a disadvantage, so I was shocked about that. CM Punk versus Ryback was just, it was a complete fail to me. It was a boring match. Ryback did not got a comment in the chat room. This pay-per-view was the worst of the year. I think it was the second worst. The worst to me was Night of Champions, probably because I didn't expect so much from Battleground, and that Rhodes match helped, and the Giant Swing helped. I expected more from Night of Champions, and it totally, Night of Champions, there was no good moments of Night of Champions. I believe that was the worst pay-per-view of the year. This one was the second, because the only reason why I give this the nod over Night of Champions is because of the Rhodes family match. That was actually a good part of the pay-per-view, as opposed to Night of Champions. Night of Champions had zero, no good parts of it. It was an absolute travesty. CM Punk and Ryback, like I said, I was disappointed, very disappointed, especially with all the CM Punk boys, all the CM Punk marks. I've even seen CM Punk marks on Wrestling Inc. and Bleacher Report. I've even seen CM Punk marks talk about how bad that match was. And I think that pretty much says it all right there. It was just a horrible match, and it was an absolute waste, and I don't even know why they would have CM Punk win the match and then turn around and have another match set up for Raw. It was just a bad idea, and just the low blow, just how they set it up was just absolutely ridiculous, and it was just bad booking. It was just bad booking all the way, and very disappointed. Very, 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 very disappointed. And then they would turn around, and then they turn around and gave Ryback the job. You become a Heyman guy, and then you turn around and lose against CM Punk. You had a couple of decent spots throughout the build, but for some reason, you lose at the pay-per-view. But somehow, we're supposed to believe that we're supposed to be interested in what else you have to offer between this match. It was an absolute failure, and I really hope that the WWE has something for Ryback, because it seems like every time they set up Ryback to be something, it seems like they're kind of playing with Ryback. I don't see them doing anything with Ryback in the near future, other than similar to what they've been doing since he became a face. Let's go back. Last year, Hell in a Cell, same time this year. Got a comment in the chat room, Jobber to the Stars. I mean, that's pretty much what he is. I mean, if you think about it, let's just go with the past year of what Ryback has done. For some reason, they gave him this huge, gigantic push when Cena went out of commission last October. And so, if all of you who remember, see some people comment on the chat room, all of you who remember, Cena went out, he was injured. Mick Foley had a spot last year before Hell in a Cell that, he went on Raw, Punk was a heel. He was kind of bullying Mick Foley, and then they had the camera shot go over to the person who they had CM Punk kind of look startled, and then all of a sudden they go to the camera shot, and whoa, lo and behold, there's Ryback. And initially I was like, I mean, this guy, the best win that this guy has so far is The Miz and what, Tyler Rex and Curt Hawkins in a handicap match. You defeat, I don't remember what his name is, from the Indies. He also had a run in TNA. But he was in the team. He's in the team Blackout. I'm sure that people in the chat room know who I'm talking about. I don't remember his name, but in the Indies, he's a part of the team Blackout. I don't remember his name in WWE. But if anybody in the chat room, feel free to say that. To say the Sabian, I believe his name is Sabian. As far as Blackout's concerned, but I don't remember exactly his name in the WWE. It was looking. Yeah, and TNA, Jared Wattler, that was his WWE name, Jared Wattler, and in TNA, he was Rashad Cameron. I do remember Rashad when he was Rashad Cameron, but he was Sabian in as far as Blackout. But yeah, I mean. he beat people like that. He beat people. He beat some other indie guys that not very many people know of, other than the hardcore wrestlers. So that was his claim to fame. That was Ryback's claim to fame before he got thrust into the main event scene against CM Punk. So that's all we had. But at the same time, though, Feed Me More chance, all of that, you know, people got into it. People was interested. And the whole Feed Me More, that got over. People was kind of on the bandwagon of him actually winning the WWE Championship. And then they kind of messed it up with Brad Maddox, you know, being a rogue referee. That really hurt him. I mean, that hurt him, and I've even heard, you know, commentators, as far as journalists, esteemed journalists, talked about, agree with me and say that that was really the defining moment for Ryback. That was it. I think that he was getting like a meteoric rise. He was getting feverish pops. He was getting huge as a face. He was getting hugely over. I remember when they, right before was it Hell in a Cell, when I think Punk had the option to choose either John Cena, and I agree, great comment in the chat room, Ryback is not as bad on the mic as many people make him out to be. I totally agree with that. I've actually had conversations about to people about that. As far as Ryback's mic work, I don't think Ryback's mic work is as bad as people criticize it to be. Of course, it has. It's improved, because I remember last year when he was in the ring with Mick Foley. Well, I think it was this year actually when he turned heel right after, I believe it was right after Mania. Going into elimination, going to Extreme Rules, because if I'm not mistaken, is between Mania and Extreme Rules is when he made the turn, went against Cena at Extreme Rules, and in between the Mania and the Extreme Rules, he had his segment with Foley, and he really seemed like he was like reading from a script, and it was just it was a bad promo. But the whole big guy, the whole cockiness, it wasn't too bad, and I think that he is improving as that. But just as far as how they're booking them, just a total waste. Lost at Hell in a Cell, bad idea, and then he goes. Then the Shield comes around. November was the triple threat match between John Cena, CM Punk, and Ryback. That's when the Shield comes, just further sabotages Ryback's tenure as a face. They cost him the title. He did a three-man match. It was help me out chat room or tweet. It was the Shield against Ryback. Was it Ryback, Orton, and Sheamus? It might have been Ryback. No, because Ryback, Orton. Yeah, Ryback, Orton, and Sheamus, I believe, at December, at TLC. It was Ryback and Team Hell No, I think it was. Yep, it was Ryback and Kane and Daniel Bryan. And then they lost there. And then the Rumble comes around. He loses the Rumble. But before that, he had a chance to go against CM Punk again for the title, and then the Shield cost that because that was the ladder match. And then the Chamber he lost, I think the Chamber was Ryback, Cena, and Sheamus. I think it was Ryback, Cena, and Sheamus at Elimination Chamber, if I'm not mistaken. And then he loses against Mark Henry at WrestleMania. That was a real big shocker. I mean, the whole thing around that was could he execute the shell shocked against Mark Henry, which he did, but he tried it once and he fell down. I mean, they just poorly booked that match too. It made him look weak. And then the turn comes around. He's Cena's whipping boy. Then he just kind of does the whole bully thing, which kind of gets over. Becomes a Heyman guy. That in theory worked. And now again, he's being used as a jobber to the stars, as the chat room says. And so I don't. Ryback as a heel is not working, and I think that the whole Feed Me More was a better concept and got way over with the fans more than his heel run, because that match between CM Punk and Ryback was an absolute horrific exhibition, and I don't ever want to see it again. But unfortunately, we're going to see it again at Hell in a Cell a year later. Like last year, you know, set the stage, you know, for another match to be decent. I mean, at least last year, CM Punk played the heel, and he plays, you know, him being the heel helped Ryback. Ryback being the heel this year does absolutely nothing for either one of them, and so don't want to see it. And unfortunately, we are going to. And then we get the main event. Then we get Daniel Bryan against Randy Orton, which has a no contest finish. Just disappointing. Just extremely disappointing. It's kind of leaving me speechless, because there's people who pay nearly $45 to watch a pay-per-view just for them to have a no contest. I mean, that's a smack in everybody's faces who spent $45 for a pay-per-view. There should be no bad moment of a pay-per-view. Save the bad moments for Raw and SmackDown, and even then it shouldn't be any bad moments. But how in the world do you get to the point, the WWE creative gets to the point where they're even having horrible cliffhanger moments on a pay-per-view? Someone spent their hard-earned $45 to pay to see that? To pay to see a main event that led to a no contest? Just a horrible, horrible decision that should absolutely never, never happen again. Again, this person, Minister of Sinister, you are making some fantastic comments in the chat room. And everyone who subscribe, who listens to this live and listens to it, subscribing to iTunes, this guy is making some great comments. I totally agree. Again, he says, I suppose, as a guy who's making these comments, I would have been very upset if I would have paid $300 ringside. Fantastic, fantastic point. I would have been furious if I would have paid $300 ringside to leave that arena with a no contest. I would have quietly rioted, and especially rioted in my emotions. It would have been riotous, and it would have been just absolutely terrible. And the people who, you know, the people who even look at it, the bars and restaurants for free, they were upset. Just imagine someone who paid $45 for it in this chat room, you know, commented, who paid in the ringside. That's just horrible. So please, WWE, maybe one of your refs is listening to Pancakes and Power Slams on October the 8th, Tuesday night, and maybe someone's listening to it live, maybe someone's listening to it on iTunes. Let me make something very clear. For anyone, all the creative staff, do not ever book a no contest at a main event, a WWE Championship main event of a pay-per-view ever, ever again. If you do that, you will see your minor pay-per-view ratings and buy rate absolutely tank. I mean, I can protest the fact that it doesn't matter what they do with WrestleMania or Royal Rumble or Survivor Series or SummerSlam. It doesn't matter what they do. People are going to buy that just because of the name. But when you have these inaugural pay-per-views like Over the Limit and Battleground and Bragging Rights and just all these throwaway pay-per-views and Capital Punishment, that the main event a couple years ago was John Cena and R-Truth. When you have these one-off throwaway pay-per-views, you're going to have to make them relevant. You're going to have to make them worth the investment, because the next time another one-off inaugural pay-per-view comes around, people aren't going to want to buy it, because they're going to unfortunately anticipate another no contest. And so let's just hope that we don't ever see another no contest finish again at another one of these pay-per-views. And like I said, please, WWE, do not ever have another no contest finish at any pay-per-view, especially one whose is an inaugural, and we haven't seen one of its kind. We haven't seen a battleground before the pay-per-view that we just saw. All right, let's go on to Raw. I think the trivia question that I asked was the pay-per-view of Ricky Steamboat winning the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. No correct answers on Twitter yet. No correct answers on the chat room. The pay-per-view that Ricky Steamboat won the NWA World Heavyweight Championship against Ric Flair. And if you want to be, if you want to be scholarly, if you want to show the whole world how smart you are as a wrestling fan, let us know the year. One up me. Let us know the year. And by the way, every time we play Stump the Host, we play that a couple times, I believe, in the host series. We're at show number 80, by the way. Thank you all for continuing to. Numbers are just great, and we get so much great reviews through Twitter, through Facebook, through email, cravewrestling@gmail.com for all of those who would like to sponsor or advertise. We get great reviews, and thank you for your continual success. Chi-Town 90? Nope. Not the correct answer. Close, but no cigar. But again, thank you for all. Thank you for all of those people who subscribe to iTunes. I looked at the iTunes subscriptions. Great number, very humbling. And so continue to support. Follow at Crave Wrestling. Like Crave Wrestling on Facebook. If you have any Flavor of the Week ideas, if you have any ideas that Derek and I can modify the show, change the show, we listen to the people, as John Laurinaitis would say, people power. So continue to show us your love through those avenues. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live once again. And we will just continue to keep this ball rolling on Raw. Stephanie McMahon starts with an in-ring promo. She brings out reprimands Big Show, and Big Show gets fired. I'll tell you what, that was an interesting little segment there. It seemed like there was, I know that there was, it was supposed to go as far as the Big Show firing, but it seemed like there was a bit of a shoot there. Because there, for those who are aware, Dusty Rhodes kind of improvised his segment. And he kind of put his hand, he kind of stuck his hand in Stephanie McMahon's face. And Stephanie McMahon was not happy about that at all. And because that was improvised, Dusty Rhodes was not expected to do that. And I don't know. I don't know if those slaps that Stephanie McMahon gave Big Show was a part of the segment originally. And so it seemed like there's a little bit of passion that was involved beyond what was expected in that segment. But they did a good job, because even if all of that was a part of the segment, they did a really good job making it happen. And so kudos to the WWE for making that. Of course, we know Big Show is not going to be fired. You know, this is a storyline. I think the whole storyline of him being poor is dumb. It doesn't really help the storyline. They can be much more creative in the storyline of the Big Show, and then instead of saying, "Yeah, you know, this is all you have. We're going to buy your mortgage." You know, you're working for your family. And this is a guy who last summer, he had an ironclad contract, the summer of 2012 onward, he had an ironclad contract. So as a heel, he can do whatever and say whatever he wants and have an ironclad contract. But as a face, he's working, he doesn't have any other choice, and he's working for the McMahons, and he's poor, and he's under, you know, some really bad financial problems, and, you know, he's the whole mortgage thing. It's bad writing. It's not creative. They can do much more with the Big Show. and I'm just not a fan of it. I'm okay with the Big Show being in the angle, because I think that he's a good addition to it, just because of his size and him being bridled. I mean, him being forced to be bridled during this time, and I get that, and I'm okay with that, because eventually it seems like this is leading to a Big Show and Triple H match, which I'm okay with as well. But am I okay with rumored reports of Big Show versus Randy Orton for the title, for the WWE title? No, I'm not. I'm not so much. I understand that Big Show is still, and I respect the fact that the Big Show, even in his early 40s, I believe he's 42 now, if I'm not mistaken, 41, 42, somewhere around there. Even in his early 40s, he's still relevant, and there's still, he's kind of got a, he's 41. He even got a relevant spot, even in his kind of the twilight of his career, he's still meaningful, similar to Mark Henry, kind of in the twilight of his career. They gave him a boost and helped him out a lot, and he became just a wonderful part of the roster. And Big Show, similar to Big, you know, he's doing the same thing. Even at 41, twilight of his career, he's still being involved in the major angle. So I respect him for that. I respect his addition. But the sappiness got to go. I mean, the guy's cried. I wrote an article in Bleacher Report about it, as far as, I believe I called it, Why is the Big Show So Sappy? And I documented and chronicled certain moments of his career since he came, you know, in 90, what was it, 90, St. Valentine's Day Massacre. He debuted during the match between Austin and McMahon, and so that was 99, I believe it was. It was 99, St. Valentine's Day Massacre. He debuted, and so I've said this in previous shows. He's had sappy moments against Big Boss Man back in, what was it, 99, or the whole corporate, it was 2000, I believe, or 99, 2000 time, when he left the corporation. It was 99, when he left the corporation and, you know, was feuding with the Big Boss Man and the whole dad thing and sapping about that. And then the times after that, there's many a number. Point is, this guy, he shouldn't be so sappy. I think it's just a horrible idea. So we don't want to see that. Dolph Ziggler defeats Damian Sandow. Sandow takes the job again. Again, like I said before, they're just, I really don't know why they're causing Sandow to just lose every match. He needs some type of momentum before he cashes the case in. But again, like I said, watch SmackDown on Friday. I think we might be seeing a little bit different angle, a little bit different creation as far as what we are seeing with Sandow. I would be okay with a Cena Sandow feud. I've had this conversation with colleagues in the past week, and I even posted it on Twitter during Raw. I, as much as many people, most people know, I'm just not a John Cena fan. I'm not a Cena fan. However, I do respect his work ethic. I do respect his contribution to the business the past 11 years. I'm just not a Cena fan. But I will say this, as much as it hurts me to say, I am rational and I will call a spade, John Cena in the World Heavyweight title picture is one of the best ideas that the WWE has came up with the entire year. I think that Cena's addition in the World Heavyweight Championship picture, it revives the division. It's the much needed injection that the division needs that it should have had from a long time ago. I mean, Cena's done a good job before. Feel free to tweet or comment in the chat room what mania that was that he won the World Heavyweight Championship. It was Edge. It was a triple threat match. Edge, Cena, and Show. And it was the same mania that it was the same mania that the mania the other main event for the WWE title was Triple H and Randy Orton. So I believe that was because it was at 21 he went against Aki Bono. 22, I think it was him and Kane against Masters and Carlito. It might have been 20, might have been 23, if I'm not mistaken. That it was Big Show and John Cena and Edge in a triple threat match for the World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania. The World Heavyweight Championship needs to be revived. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It needs to be revived just because, I mean, the past couple of years, it's been absolutely horrible. And I think that it was WrestleMania 25. It was in 2009. It was Cena and the Big Show and Edge. Edge went after that again. The Hardy Punk series in 2009 was pretty good, and then Punk and Taker feud was good. Jericho won it at Elimination Chamber in 2010, and then I think Jack Swagger was the. I don't think I've ever said this in any show. I think I've mentioned this in articles before, but I think that Jack Swagger was the pivotal moment of the downfall of the World Heavyweight Championship. I think I finally can pinpoint the downfall of the World Heavyweight Championship, and I definitely accredit it to Jack Swagger. Him winning the title was just a horrible, horrible decision. And then Mysterio picked it up, Kane, Edge. Ziggler only kept it for a few minutes, less than 10 minutes. Then Edge still kind of revived it. And then, like I said before, the Del Rio involvement kind of brought it down a little bit. I mean, he was over, but they was just pushing him too much to the WWE audience, way too much. Christian helped. The Orton-Christian feud helped out pretty. It was pretty good in 2011. That helped, but I think of the whole Sheamus 18 seconds, Big Show. Sheamus kept her for about 7 months, so that was that was good. But at the same time, it still didn't have that major title feel. Then I think it hasn't really had that major title feel. Since probably 2010, maybe Jericho's run, I would still count it as having that major title feel, but since then it's became like a mega continental championship, like a mega intercontinental championship. So the World Heavyweight Championship has became the mega continental championship, and just bad. I mean, Del Rio having the title is a bad idea. And Cena would do a good job making the belt a 1A title like it was when Triple H had it back in 2002. Jericho's run, Jericho helped with that. Of course, Taker helped with that. What was it? It was a main event, the triple threat match at 20 between Benoit, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels at 20. that really helped. It really helped the match be revived, the title be revived. And so, yeah, hopefully Cena wins and makes it. And that's hard to say. I can't believe I just said that. But hopefully Cena wins and revives the title again. Next, we have Natalya, JoJo, and Eva Marie defeating Alicia Fox, Oksana, Rosa Mendez. It seems like the non-Total Divas pack is just really being, like, thrown in to really help out the Total Divas. They don't ever win matches. Any non-Total Divas person except for AJ, they don't really win matches anymore. Just kind of get thrown in to help out the Total Divas. And I'll tell you what, I wonder if they're going to do a segment on that on the new season of Total Divas coming out next month. I wonder if they're going to do I don't know if anyone who's listening live noticed, or anyone who will be listening on iTunes and listening the archive on I don't think anybody noticed, but JoJo never wrestled, never got in the ring. And there were a couple times where she tried to go for a tag, and Eva Marie tagged Natalya. So it makes me just kind of I observed that. It makes me just kind of want to think, you know, is that a part of the show, or was JoJo legitimately upset? Because, I mean, this is her time to shine. There's been a couple times where Eva Marie has had the opportunity to shine. Her match with I think it was her and Brie Bella against Natalya and Maria Menounos in the SummerSlam Access. So she's had some opportunities to kind of make herself known, but JoJo really hasn't, other than singing the national anthem at SummerSlam and singing Tons of Funk's theme song. That's really about it. As far as a wrestling role, no, not so much. So that's really interesting to see that. I mean, I really wish she had an opportunity to wrestle, but no, she did not step in one time. Brad Meadows comes out on stage, books Brian and Orton, Hell in a Cell. Paul Heyman in-ring promo with Ryback and Curtis Axel. CM Punk comes out and challenges Ryback, and Ryback belittles Punk. And then R-Truth comes out. R-Truth and CM Punk defeats Curtis Axel and Ryback. Again, another job by Heyman's boys. I mean, I really don't know why they're doing that. There's rumblings that R-Truth may turn heel coming here soon. I'm against the popular opinion on this. I liked R-Truth as a heel. I liked the whole little Jimmy thing. I think it ran its course, though, and I also think that another R-Truth heel turn similar to where it was would be funny. But I mean, what is it going to really lead to? Is he going to win a title? No. Is he going to ascend back up to the main event like he did before? No. So, what's the use of turning them? Something different? Yeah, I suppose. But at the same time, is it really going to lead him? I mean, is it a promotion? No, it's probably going to make his career stagnant. He's probably going to have the same type of win-loss record as he had when he was a face. So, I mean, hey, keep rapping down the ramp and have your little cheat pop by saying that the location, the city and state, and say what's up, and that's about it. I mean, the guy's 41 years old, so, I mean, that's really enough of R-Truth that we can get, and it's fine. I mean, there's no big rush or no big need to really revive his career or really kind of change his career up. He's a mid-carder. He's a mid-card babyface. And just keep it at that. Randy Orton defeats Kofi Kingston. Good match there. Definitely didn't think Kofi Kingston was going to win. This isn't Survivor Series of was 2009 or somewhere around there when they decided to give Kofi Kingston his big push, semi-push. Really, nothing really came from it. But At least they tried. Daniel Bryan comes out post-match and attacks Orton. Very aggressive Daniel Bryan there. Ricardo Rodriguez defeats Alberto Del Rio, Vicky Guerrero, as a result of Del Rio being surprised, as well as me, being surprised that John Cena, you know, was announced of being his opponent. John Cena returning from his elbow surgery that he got post SummerSlam. Hey, I got to give it to Cena, man. He's a workhorse, and you can tell that he's passionate about this business, and he loves it, and he's like, you know, there's no need for me to wait. I'm healed up, ready to go. And similar to when he tore his pectoral muscle or his tricep before he came back to the Royal Rumble that he won a few years back. Yeah, I mean, kudos to him. Again, not a Cena fan, but I appreciate his work ethic. And again, he will revive. He will be what the division needs to revive the division. Next trivia question. Who did John Cena defeat in his first pay-per-view victory? Who did John Cena defeat in his first pay-per-view victory? And again, I'm all about one-upping. So if you want to show how smart you are, you can comment and say the pay-per-view it was. And if you want to prove how even smarter than smart you are, let me know the year. So at bare minimum, who did he beat? And you can add on the pay-per-view and the year if you'd like. Let's go to the Real Americans defeating Colleen and Santino again. Big giant swing. Cool. Very, very cool once again that we saw that. Miz TV segment interrupted by the Wyatt family. Miz, he gets in between Bray Wyatt and Rowan and Harper. But runs towards Bray and manages to elude group. It seems like they're just really throwing people at Bray Wyatt now until Kane comes back. Kane is scheduled to come back here the next Raw or two. So, I don't know. Maybe it's another one of those things where they're just giving Bray Wyatt another person to go against. While, like I said before, Kane comes back, maybe it was just a one-off thing. But either way, just they need to do something with Bray Wyatt, and they need to do something with Bray Wyatt immediately. Absolutely immediately. So then we get to the Shield against Daniel Bryan and the Rhodes Brothers. I think it was good. I think it was a good match. And I was I'm a big proponent of what they're doing with the Rhodes family. The Shield wins, and so you know it kept the Shield's dignity, which was good. So you know, hopefully this feud continues. And like I wrote in an article in Bleacher Report, I think that they should book the Rhodes brothers to win the tag team title and then eventually lose it. To maybe the Shield or the Wyatts, and then have Cody vie for the World Heavyweight Championship, which is now acquired by Damian Sandow. Cody wins the championship, and then around maybe Elimination Chamber time, Dustin or Goldust, he turns heel, he costs Cody Rhodes the championship, and that leads to a Rhodes versus Rhodes match with Dusty Rhodes as the special guest referee at WrestleMania 30. So that's how I would book it, and I think it would work well that way. Goldust needs to be the heel, not Cody. Cody was a heel for most of his tenure in the WWE. He started off as like a kind of like a cookie cutter babyface Rhodes guy. Didn't really work out too well. And I don't think I don't think that him being a heel again would help his career, because he was a heel for so long. Like I said, only was face for a second, and then Ted DiBiase, it was the Night of Champions, when him and Bob Holly was tag team champions, and then Ted DiBiase made his debut, and then Cody turned on Holly, which was a good turn, by the way. But he was heel ever since, and I think his face run is good. I think he's over, and I think that he needs to be one of the top faces in the WWE, at least on the SmackDown end, at least on the World Heavyweight Championship end. And Goldust, at the end of the day, there's not really a big need for him to be babyface, other than really helping him out. Jericho Vengeance of 2002, great answer there, indeed. I don't think that Goldust needs to be a heel. Goldust needs to be a face, carrying on to WrestleMania, because Cody Rhodes being a heel would just be stagnant, because eventually it became that way. All right, well, let's really, before we end the show here again, real quick, SmackDown and Impact Wrestling. I have them on wrestling.com, and I have articles, Impact Wrestling Review. Check that out. Usually do it Saturday, Sunday time. Impact Wrestling Review and SmackDown Review every weekend. I usually go very short with the SmackDown and Impact Wrestling recap here, for very in-depth. I love writing the articles I do of the reviews, because I usually tag on the Twitter reaction from the wrestler or WWE Universe when I write the articles, and so it's a lot of fun just to have that media interaction as well. So real quick on SmackDown, we got a Big Show in-ring promo. Triple H interrupts, tell him that he brought his house, which I mentioned before. RVD defeats Fandango by DQ. Fandango attacks RVD post-match, and RVD bounces back, gives him a Van Terminator. Ryback defeats R-Truth. Kurt Axel attacks R-Truth post-match. Alberto Del Rio defeats Dolph Ziggler. Los Matadores defeats 3MB, Slater Mahal. Brie Bella defeats Oksana. Kofi Kingston defeats Biggie Langston, which I think should be pushed a lot more, Biggie Langston. Because remember, three and enough, man, I need five. Check out the lyrics of his theme song, if you don't remember that. For those who don't follow NXT, he was a big baby face back then, and he had this big five thing. It was kind of like the heel version of King Kong Bundy back in the day, when King Kong Bundy would demand the five count back in the 80s, and Kofi Kingston was like the baby face version of that. And he was really over NXT. He won the title, and he was really over. And so maybe they'll carry that into the WWE, but they're just kind of making him a jobber, you know, just kind of like a big man jobber. And I think that Biggie Langston deserves to be, I mean, for as big as he is, he's very agile, and he's a good wrestler too. So I think that they should give him a little bit more love than what they're doing. And then the Big Show defeats Sheldon Orton by DQ. Sheldon Orton attacks Big Show post-match, and the Usos and Daniel Bryan makes the save. Real quick, Impact Wrestling, AJ Styles promo, interrupted by Bully Ray. Jeff Hardy and Mannix defeats Kenny King and Chris Sabin. Hardy suggests a four-way match at Ultimate X, but for some reason Kenny King wasn't involved. That was really weird. Where in the world why did Kenny King get the shaft? I mentioned on the Impact Wrestling article, unless they book him better between now and October 20th, when Bound for Glory is, he really drew the short end of the short straw, because he's not even involved. Why can't they just make it a five-man Ultimate X match? It made absolutely no sense. And then the Magnus and Eagle Gauntlet match, he gets past Bad Influence, but he loses to Bobby Roode, which I understand. But Sting comes out, and then he talks about a big break, and when Magnus talks about I haven't got my big break, and Sting mentions Flair, and somehow Sting kind of throws himself to go against Magnus and Bound for Glory. I mean, it's okay, you know, as far as, you know, I see what they're trying to do with Magnus, but it was just weird how it was booked. It was just an interview. I mean, this is the biggest TNA pay-per-view of the year, and you book a match because of a sappy Magnus and Sting just saying, hey, you know, yeah, it's me. I want to give you your spot, you know. That was just kind of weird. It was just kind of thrown together, and it wasn't really the best idea to book Magnus if they really want to make him over. You just kind of threw it together. So I wasn't a big fan of that. Velvet Sky versus Brooke, and then Lady Tapa appears and takes out Velvet Sky. That was a flat debut or return from Lady Tapa. The crowd just wasn't in it. The TNA Impact Wrestling crowd just was not in it, the Little Rock crowd. And so, I don't know. I suppose that they're really going to do something with Lady Tapa. I liked Lady Tapa a lot as far as the potential that she has. She's a niece of Barbarian. Barbarian is, to me, is one of the most underrated wrestlers in the history of the business, and she has a good look. She has a good presence to her as far as a heel, huge stature to her. So I think that's good, but not so much. Next question, trivia question: what group? Speaking of the Barbarian, what group? What stable was the Barbarian in? What stable was the Barbarian in the NWA? What stable was the Barbarian in the NWA? And again, real quick, just as far as the rest of the Impact Wrestling here, Samoa Joe defeats Bully Ray. It was a decent match there. DQ victory, attacks Joe post-match, AJ Styles comes in from the crowd to make the save, and then we get the Dixie Carter Hulk Hogan segment and Hulk Hogan quitting. Will he be at 30? Who knows? He shouldn't be in the wrestling role for sure. Alright, Ring of Honor, Eddie Edwards defeats Adam Page, and then we talked about the Blackout. Interesting, Outlaw Inc. defeats Ruckus and Black G's from Blackout. Matt Taven defeats Cedric Alexander. Kevin Steen defeats ACH, and Mike Bennett defeats Jimmy Jacobs. Red Dragon defeats Jay Lethal and Michael Elgin, and Adam Cole defeats Strong to retain the Ring of Honor championship. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, the flavor of the week is next. We're going to talk about what needs to be revived. What show needs to be revived to help the World Heavyweight Championship? I'm not going to talk too much about it, but I do think that the World Heavyweight Championship, like I said before, it was the 1A title. You had the 1A and it was like the 1B title as far as the World Heavyweight Championship. 2002. They wanted to, you know, do the split, and that's when Brock Lesnar went to – he was the Undisputed Champion. He became like the WWE Champion. He goes over to SmackDown. Triple H gets granted the World Heavyweight Championship. And whoever that is in the chat room, you need to go away, because those things are being screened, and that's just ridiculous. Some people doing that, but anyways, and so the World Heavyweight Championship gets revived in 2002, and Triple H does it. He does a great job, and then of course, like I said, you get a list of of champions that was good. And just from 2002, we're just going to go real quick. Triple H and then Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels wins Elimination Chamber. That was a good. That was surprising. Triple H wins back. Goldberg wins in 03. Keeps it for less than 3 months. That was a very bad run by Goldberg. Triple H wins it back. Chris Benoit, that was really good at WrestleMania 20. Randy Orton in 04 and SummerSlam, he actually was a heel, but he got some pops because of that. Because I mean, Toronto has their own. They were in Toronto. Toronto has their own mind, a very unique crowd. Triple H wins it back at Unforgiven of 2004, gets vacated. Triple H wins it again. Batista, then Angle. That Angle won a 20-man battle royal, but Angle's run, it was like 3 months, about 3 months or so. But just Angle being a champion, period, is a boost to anywhere. Mysterio went to WrestleMania 22. That was, you know, more of an Eddie Guerrero thing. King Booker wins it in 2006. I think that was fantastic. I think that was absolutely fantastic. Very, very, very good. Very impressed with. With Booker T's run, very funny comment in the chat room. Never acknowledge the trolls. So someone just kind of called himself something that's kind of self-degrading. They're interesting. All right. Well, then we get the Batista and then the Undertaker, which always helps. Edge, Great Khali, which was the worst. The absolute worst WWE World Heavyweight Championship run that the WWE has ever thought of. I have absolutely no idea why they would have Khali win. That is just a total mark in the history of the WWE World Heavyweight Championship that can never be erased. And so, just a bad idea. Batista took us from our misery and won it back just a couple months later. Edge, Undertaker, only kept it for a month, and then the whole Taker got it stripped because he used his finisher, and then that was weird. Edge wins it back. TLC match at One Night Stand in 2008. CM Punk cashes in the Money in the Bank. Chris Jericho wins it in the Scramble that Punk wasn't even involved in. Batista, and then Jericho, and then Cena. Edge wins it in 09. John Cena and Edge. Their 09 feud was pretty good for the world title. And then Jeff Hardy, CM Punk. Jeff Hardy wins it again. CM Punk wins it again for the third time. Then Taker wins it in Hell in a Cell. Then Jericho wins it back at the Elimination Chamber, which I was absolutely happy about and surprised. But that really led to the Undertaker and Shawn Michaels match for 2010. And then, like I said, Swagger just really messed it up. Mysterio won it. Then Kane. That was actually a really, really good run from Kane. That really helped him. That was probably one of the best runs that Kane has had in the WWE. Had the belt for a decent time, about 4 months, and then Edge kind of broke that up. And then they did the whole Ziggler and Edge thing. Ziggler, the whole Vicky Guerrero. Ziggler keeps it and loses to Edge within minutes. And then Edge is forced to retire after Mania. Christian wins it. Him and Orton go back and forth a few times. Mark Henry wins it at Night of Champions, and then the Big Show, and then wins it at Money at TLC, and then Daniel Bryan casts it in. Sheamus wins it at WrestleMania. The Big Show wins it at Hell in a Cell, and then Alberto Del Rio turns face, wins it at episode of SmackDown. Ziggler casts it in at Raw, And then now we have Alberto Del Rio since June. And like I said before, I think the cutting, I think the cutoff point was Swagger in 2010. But like I said, what does it need to do to get revived? The thing is, what will help it real quick before we go? What will help it is John Cena would help it, and then he needs and then he needs to feud against reputable people. I mean, John Cena and Del Rio would just be a bad feud. It wasn't really a good feud when they were fighting for the WWE Championship. I mean, throw a Bray Wyatt in there. Throw away Dean Ambrose if you want to. I mean, it needs to be revived. Even Brock Lesnar and John Cena would be an interesting... It would be a very interesting feud, and so yeah, I think we have some possibilities for the World Heavyweight Championship to be revived. But I'll tell you what though, it being anything affiliated with Alberto Del Rio, bad idea, and I think it would absolutely be to the demise of the World Heavyweight Championship if Alberto Del Rio keeps it and they continue to try to have it on him. Get it off of Del Rio, put it on Cena. Like, again, it hurts me to say that. Put it on Cena and let Cena just have his way with the World Heavyweight Championship. He'll restart good feuds and he'll be a good part of the World Heavyweight Championship scene. Tweet at Crave Wrestling, 347-884-8452 is the number put in your back pocket. Didn't get any calls. Didn't manage to pick up any calls today because of our content of Battleground, which was even rough to talk about in the first place. But next week, check us out. Of course, Derek, our Royal correspondent, will be back today. We'll be back next week. We wish him the best. And like I said, he had a engagement that was the last minute that he had to go to. And I think I will have some fun stuff coming up for next week. It's gonna be a really good time, really good episode, as we do as always. Again, thank you for all of your support. We have a lot of fun. The numbers are great. And even the trolls in the chat room make the show fun and exciting, and keep on trolling. Until next week, we will continue to have some fun. Check us out again, 11 p.m. Next week, and we were going to have some good time next week as well. Flavor of the week, we're going to do something. I'm going to make a little surprise for you. Again, we have trivia, and until next week, check me out on Crave Wrestling at Twitter. Like Crave Wrestling on Facebook. And until then, have a great week. Enjoy your week of wrestling. And God bless. Goodbye.